Colts Cover 2 podcast. I am Indy Star Colts insider Jim Aiello, and I am joined, as always, by fellow insider and co-host Joel A. Erickson. Today is a very special episode of the Colts Cover 2 podcast. We have a special guest joining us in the next segment here, and Daniel Bragg. You guys get to hear from him and on his Colts thoughts, and it's really good. We actually recorded the segment already. Get a little peek behind the curtain, the magic of podcasting. We recorded the segment already. This is not a continuous timeline. We are just rewinding and doing weird things.
Christopher Nolan wrote the timeline for this.
Correct. We were just talking about Tenet, so I think that's probably where in my head I was like, yeah, this is cool. We're doing things out of order. It was actually a really fun segment. We talk a lot of Colts. We go through the offense, the defense. I make Daniel pick the wins and losses for the next end of the year. We both, you guys got to pick. We all picked our favorite breakout defender. This is fun previewing something we've already done, because normally I have to preview and then I'm like, oh, we didn't get to that. I previewed something we didn't do, but now I know we did it. So it's fun. We actually talk about, I make horrible dad puns. So that's good. It was all gravy, man. It's all gravy.
So you're saying in the future, we're going to record the podcast back to front all the time?
Yeah. We'll just record like what we talk about, and then we'll record the intro. So I sound smarter when we actually talk about what we're doing. It makes me look better.
Christopher Nolan would call it a temporal pincer movement.
So what we're going to do, we're going to keep this short, because actually we went long with Daniel and it was great. Like I said, it was really good stuff. So what we're going to do is hit a little bit of Colts news, and then a little bit of national news for you guys. And then we'll lead right into our conversation with Daniel for the bye week. So the news, I think, Joel, I want you to start, because you wrote about the injuries earlier this week and who they might be getting back. I know there's a lot of speculation about Michael Pittman. There's a lot of speculation about Kamoko Ture. I think we talked about a little bit, like guys like Justin Houston, this being a good time for the bye week to pop up and him to get healthy. So what do we know about Colts injuries going into the bye week, and who might they have ready for week 8 against the Lions?
I feel pretty good about Darius Leonard, Michael Pittman. Don't you?
Yes.
Mainly because we've seen them.
And Costanzo, if we're going to say anything, like I think he was playing with some rib cartilage stuff that I think will a week off will help. So yeah, I'll add him to the list.
Yeah. Yeah. Wait. So I feel pretty good about those guys. Where are you at on Kamoko Ture? Because listening to Frank talk on Monday, I felt like he was saying, you know, pump the brakes on Kamoko a little bit.
I completely agree, reading between the lines. I think he said, I've always thought that there was going to be like, yeah, he'll return to practice, but then it might be a little bit of time like before we get him. I don't expect to see like full speed Kamoko Ture playing 50% of the snaps like until, I don't know, December. They have
time here. After, when you place a player on reserve PUP, they're out for 6 weeks. And then the next 5 weeks after that, the team has the next 5 weeks after that to bring them back to practice. Once they've brought the player back to practice, they then have 21 days to activate them to the active roster. That's as clear as I could make it. I know it's a little confusing in a little bit, but I think they're going to use some of that practice window. I mean, he just hasn't played. So we'll see. They're not, I mean, he can be doing stuff in terms of rehab this week, but they're not practicing this week. Like, they're not doing anything starting today. The CBA does not allow it. Frank Reich said the other day, like, they have to have 4 days off, which I believe starts today and goes through Sunday.
Yep.
So, he said I can't remember what his exact wording was, but he said, the paraphrase is, we don't know exactly if he'll be back for Detroit. And I think that both you and I are thinking that even when he comes back, it's going to be more in like what Ben Banigou's doing right now.
Agreed.
Getting a handful of snaps a game, as opposed to full go Kamoko. I remember my expectations. Whenever he's back, temper my expectations for what you're going to see from him as far as being a transformative part of the pass rush right away.
I think it's going to be, honest to God, I think it's going to be third down passing situations only. So that might be 15 to 20 snaps.
Yeah, I think that's where he would have been anyway.
Right.
But even more so coming off of this injury.
Right. I think that's what, again, I don't think you'll even see him. I mean, again, you might see him on some second and longs or something like that, but like, I really think they're going to be really conservative and try to build them back up. Again, there's a difference. We've talked about this before. There's a difference between being keeping up in shape and rehabbing, which is what he's been doing, and then being in football shape, like just being able to play a lot of snaps. So again, that's some, that's kind of even a side thing he has to worry about, let alone the rehab he's doing. So I do think that there's going to be tempered expectations. Again, I agree with you on Darius Leonard. I think, like I said, Costanzo, I think Justin Houston has been fine. He's been playing, but I think he was a little banged up, a little nicked up. I think this is a great week off for him. Mo Alie-Cox, we don't really know where he's at. He's had a knee injury. He suffered it in the Cleveland game. Saw him limping a little bit there. Didn't play last week against Cincinnati. Did Frank give us an update on where Mo is and if they expect him to be back?
Kind of gave us a joint update on all those guys, and it was pretty positive for the first five. It was Darius, Mo, Michael Pittman, and then throw in Matt Adams.
Oh, yeah.
Wait, who's the other one?
I don't know. You said five, so I'm – Costanzo? I think did he mention Costanzo?
No, it's somebody else who's out, and I'm going to be really upset. I apologize to whoever this player is because I know they definitely listen to the podcast.
I will while you're looking it up, I will talk about Michael Pittman quickly just because all the reports that I've been getting from somebody, you know, leak source, all that stuff, all the reports I've been getting is that he's on track to return after the bye week for the Colts. I don't know. Again, I don't know what capacity, but we saw him at practice the other day out of his cast, walking around fine again. And he was actually doing, I mean, he posted a video of himself running a little bit. Like there's a lot of reasons to feel good about where Michael Pittman is at. We can check. I I'm going to try to check back in probably Sunday or Monday and see where he's at in terms of returning for the Colts. But I think that was a pretty good, I think the odds are pretty good that he'll be in uniform against Detroit.
The other one was Chaz Green. So I take back my apology. Colts fans aren't listening to this podcast wondering about Chaz Green.
Correct. Especially not with a healthy Anthony Costanzo. So, injury wise, that's pretty good. Anything else I don't think there's anything else injury wise we want to cover. I think news wise, Brian Baker, we got a chance to talk to him yesterday, defensive line coach for the Colts. And I asked him flat out, is Tyquan Lewis going to get more snaps or not? Because he's been pretty effective. He's got 1.5 sacks, a few tackles for a loss, pressures. Again, not flashy, huge numbers, but when you're only playing 14 snaps a game, which is where he's at, that's pretty good. He's being pretty efficient with the snaps that he's getting. So I asked Brian Baker flat out, are we going to start seeing more of Tyquan Lewis? And he said, yeah. So he said, yeah, we need to get him more snaps. And I think there were two reasons. One, it was for his development, and two, because I looked up the numbers. Denico Autry and Al-Kadeem Muhammad are both playing more snaps per game than they ever have. So I think we might start seeing a little more Tyquan Lewis. And again, when Kamoko comes back, he'll snap up some of those defensive end snaps too. By the way, I think that's where we're going to start seeing a lot more Tyquan Lewis as defensive end.
Ooh, I like this. This is interesting. Because you can't take Buckner off the field is what you're saying.
Right, and that's where he's been effective on a couple of his plays has been defensive end. He's done a really good job there. I wrote this story in the beginning of the year about where Tyquan Lewis was mentally and the decluttering of his mind of trying to do a million things. Well, one of the things they really wanted him to do was be a versatile inside-outside player, and he still is, but I think what they're trying to do is say, like, just focus on being a good defensive end right now. And again, he'll still slide inside sometimes. But be a good defensive end right now. Worry about that. Focus on that. And that's kind of what Brian Baker said yesterday, was that he's been more outside than in as opposed to inside than out. And that seems to be working out for him. Have you seen that from Tyquan?
I think you can probably take 10 snaps a game off of Denico Autry and give them to Tyquan Lewis right now. And that's I say that just because Autry is playing the role that I think Lewis can play too, where he's playing defensive end and base downs, and he plays in the third down pass rush next to DeForest Buckner. So, like, I think you can probably, because Autry's playing 75% of the snaps right now.
I know, that's a lot.
That's probably too many. He's not like, I would rather have him down in the 65% range where Justin Houston is. DeForest Buckner is at 83.2, but DeForest Buckner is a freak of nature. So
yeah, I don't care. Honest to God, like, there is not a point where I would worry about DeForest Buckner unless those numbers said 100. And then I'd be like, that's probably too much.
But yeah, don't you think you could pull down Danico's snaps, keep him healthier and fresher?
Yeah, that's what Baker said. That's kind of what I wrote about, was that He thinks his starters, guys like Danico and Al-Kadeem, will be more effective with fewer snaps because they'll just be fresher. And therefore, and maybe Tyquan has earned a bigger role. I think it actually is kind of a rising tide situation.
Yeah, so I think that's true. One of the biggest things is they just need more I think they just need more edge rush.
Joel?
I think they need more edge rush.
Do you think they should have traded for Yannick Ngakoue? Because that's so that was the next part of our thing. Unless there's any other Colts news you wanted to get to. I don't think
there No, I think we can move to the national part of it. Yeah, the trade deadline is election day. That's the easiest way to remember it. Just
2 weeks.
When all of your neighbors are the most angry they'll be all year, that's when the trade deadline is. But there's already some deals being made. The Niners made it kind of a minor deal.
Yeah.
Yesterday picked up Jordan Willis from the Jets. I don't think any Colts fan who watched that game is worried about the Colts taking anybody from the Jets other than maybe Darnold.
Can I ask you a quick aside question?
Yeah.
Is the player and a 7th-round pick for a 6th-round pick the single most popular trade in the NFL?
Yeah. Yeah, people like that one.
It seems like that's like the deal you see the most.
Well, the overarching one is any player for a 5th or for a 5th to 7th rounder. Like,
yeah,
that's the deal that happens most often.
I just feel like we've seen so many of the, like, yeah, I don't really want to give up much for this. I'll give you this player and a 7 for your 6. And everybody's like, okay, yeah, that's a slight bump in value. So we'll do that. Anyway.
But yeah, I think that's the most, but then the blockbuster happened while we were recording the other part of this podcast. Yannick Ngakoue already traded to the Vikings this year, traded again for very close to the same compensation. The Vikings essentially traded a 2nd rounder for a 3rd rounder and the right to see if they could have Yannick Ngakoue this season. And now because they're not going to make the playoffs most likely. Just because of that, then they're going to have they tried to get something out of him, and they got pretty good value out of him. I don't know. Like, is Ngakoue available to everyone? I don't know, because Ngakoue apparently Baltimore area. Somebody in my Twitter mentions right now, I apologize for being distracted. Somebody in my Twitter mentions right now is arguing that Jameis Winston is better than Peyton Manning. I just wanted to throw that out there for the podcast listeners.
I'm a big Jameis guy, as you know, and I wouldn't go there. I wouldn't go anywhere near there. I don't live in that neighborhood.
That's some red meat for the that's some red meat for the listening fan base. You can just just don't drive your car off the road.
that's a steaming hot take. I don't know where you get that one. Trades.
Straight up says he is better than Peyton in every single respect after 5 seasons.
You're getting very distracted by something that no one else thinks. There's not one other person on the earth who, maybe Jameis Winston's mom, but probably not even that.
Okay, so you and I have already talked about this, so I know where you're going with it. But if there's a guy who's been talked about that's probably able to be had for a fairly low pick, who's the guy that you could see the Colts going and getting?
Yeah, well, I think you and I both agree. Like, I don't really see there being a whole bunch of holes on this Colts team. It's weird. Like, I mean, I guess you can argue about a quarterback, but I don't really want to. I just don't think that's realistic. I don't think you trade for a quarterback mid-season, like a guy like Matt Stafford or Matt Ryan or even a Sam Darnold or anybody like that, and plug him in. So that doesn't seem very realistic to me.
Has it ever happened? Have we ever seen it?
I don't think so. Like, you trade for backups occasionally, but never that.
Did Carson Palmer get traded mid-season, maybe? The Raiders to the Cardinals? Didn't he force his way out?
Yeah, but wasn't that the Raiders first? Wasn't there a Raiders stop there?
In the Raiders? No. That was after this. Quarterbacks don't get traded mid-season. They just don't.
I agree. I don't think it's going to happen. So we can end that. I there's probably an argument for maybe a little more corner depth just based on what you have. The guys that are playing for the Colts are playing well, but you can maybe argument for a little bit more, but I think where you're going with this and where I agree with you is a guy like Ryan Kerrigan. Just a little more.
Yeah. Ryan Kerrigan's interesting.
little more edge rush. But again, we kind of just talked about it. You might be getting you. I mean, how much? Again, if you give Taekwon a little more play and you get some Kamoko back, how much Ryan Kerrigan is an upgrade? Again, this I think the argument is you can never have enough pass rush, and you want to throw a bunch of depth at it.
Well, I think the other thing is that by the time that the trade deadline's actually here, they'll have played another game against the Lions. They'll have a better idea of where Kamoko is. If they feel like Kamoko's ready to go and it's not going to take a while, then probably not. But I think just as currently constructed over the first six games, that was the one we identified. Some of the wide receivers that have been mentioned, I don't know if they're giant upgrades really.
I'm a Jamison Crowder guy. I think he's more talented than people want to give him credit for. He plays in New York, which we saw where like Robbie Anderson did once he got out of New York.
Yeah. Well, Jamison Crowder was pretty good with the Redskins. Yes. When they were still the Redskins before they became the football team. I don't know.
Like, that's a team that is maybe apparently selling off assets. Ballard knows really well. I could, again, if they traded for a guy like Jamison Crowder, I like the depth. But again, you're going to get Pittman back. You still have T.Y. Hilton. You still have Marcus Johnson. You still have Zach Pascal.
If you trade for Crowder, it's because you don't think you're getting Paris Campbell back and you want to fill that spot a little bit. Although he can't do – does Crowder do any of the, like, jet sweepy type stuff?
No, I don't think he's the burner that Paris Campbell is. He's a really good slot guy. Really good.
Yeah, he's more of a traditional slot. So if that's why you make that deal if you do. Kerrigan was just interesting because Kerrigan is in a spot where there are two young players that the Redskins want to get playing time, and Kerrigan can still get it. He's got three sacks.
Yeah.
But I also think that if as we get closer to the deadline, I think there's a chance that Kerrigan's price goes way up because there's a lot of teams that need pass rush help. And if the price goes way up, just count the Colts out. They're just not going to do that.
Yeah. To be honest with you guys too, we'll do next week. I think next Thursday, we'll probably do a bigger trade deadline breakdown.
A better look at it. We just wanted to mention it just because in Gawker.
Yeah, it's happening. Yeah, I mean, again, like I said, I think we said it at the end of maybe the last segment, but like this trade deadline stuff is kind of crazy because I thought we had time, and it sounds like these teams are starting to pull the trigger earlier. This is starting to feel more and more like baseball, basketball trade deadlines, which I love, by the way. It's great to see some of that stuff going on and make the trade deadline interesting. But yeah, I think that in terms of we'll get more into that, but I think you're right. I'm going to look more into Jamison Crowder and any receivers that are available to see if I can make a legitimate argument for it. I don't know that I can. Ryan Kerrigan is one I'm with you. I'm interested there. Again, I don't think it's like a must go out and do, but I am interested there. Before we get to the our special guest, Daniel Bragg, let's just moment of silence for Ryan Fitzpatrick. Thank you. Thank you. Okay. Well, I
apologize for giggling through the moment.
I feel bad. I felt that guy's quotes were heartbreaking, man. Like that was, I love that dude. I really have. I've always been a Ryan Fitzpatrick guy. I'm not gonna lie to you guys. I've been on the Fitz magic like bandwagon since Buffalo. I love him. So again, I'm not saying he's an amazing quarterback. I wouldn't compare him to Peyton Manning, for instance, like a crazy person. but I do love him, and I feel bad. Like I said, he really did say, like, I thought this was my team. They were 3-3. They won three of their last four. He had played really well. If you go by QBR, he's seventh in the NFL. Like, he's having a good season. Now, we all know who Ryan Fitzpatrick is. We knew this would go off the rails at one point. But anyway, I think it's probably a good time to go to Tua during the bye week, and he's ready and all that stuff. But, man, I just feel bad for Ryan Fitzpatrick. I was loving what they were doing in Miami.
It was tough to read his comments. If Colts fans saw his comments about, you know, he really felt like this was his team. Just really, like, very clearly hurt to have. They just won two games by blowout. So you feel like you got something going. But he also had said, you know, a while ago that he knows he's just holding this – he's just holding the place for Tua.
Yeah.
Kind of a weird situation. It's interesting that they went to him when they did. It shows sort of a long-term foresight from the Dolphins organization. But also, and you've got the bye week, but also, yeah, you, I feel for anybody at the end of their career here in the NFL, when it happens, like he said, the first thing he thought was, did I just play my last game? Yeah. That's really tough. That's really hard. That's a really hard thing to think. I think anybody who follows the NFL knows that. I think there's a lot of people who are really like, this guy should just retire. But like, it's hard to be like really, really great at something and then just be done with it. But like at midlife, essentially. And so, yeah, no, tough to watch with Ryan Fitzpatrick. I think the Dolphins will be fine. I actually am kind of interested in that AFC East race.
Yeah.
Like it's tightening up a lot. But yeah, no, tough to watch with Ryan Fitzpatrick this week. Bold of the Dolphins too, to go to Tua.
Yeah. I'm conflicted as like just an outside viewer. Like I actually think it's probably the right move. Like it's smart to do this.
I texted you right after this, and the first thought that popped into my head was, are the Dolphins the first team to, like, do the sell high thing on Ryan Fitzpatrick where, like, we're going to get rid of him before it all goes bad?
Yeah, I mean, again, like I said, it's going to go off the rails of Ryan Fitzpatrick. It always does. Otherwise, like, the one team that actually paid him, I think, was Buffalo, and they lived to regret it. So that ended up, like, I think that was a smart move. And again, like, you don't – a lot of times when you go to a rookie, like, again, I'm thinking back to the Bears, say, again, you guys know I like to use my Bears examples, but, like, when they signed Mike Glennon and they said he's going to be the starter, we'll give Mitch time to develop, and then the team was awful, or at least the offense was awful, and then, like, threw Mitch to the Wolves, like, okay, that's not a great situation to throw a rookie quarterback into, and that's generally what happens is rookie quarterbacks get thrown into bad situations, especially the top ones because they're already playing for bad teams, where this is where Tua gets to take over a 3-3 team that is talented, that is rolling, like, I kind of like that he gets to just jump in with the momentum and try to keep it going.
Yeah, it's interesting. It's just, it's a really interesting, I don't know if we've seen a team do this midstream like this with a team that was having success. Usually they kind of wait for an injury or a dip in play or a losing streak to kind of make the move. The Dolphins were like, wait, we look good. Let's not.
Or a doctor puncturing a quarterback's lung.
Yeah, poor Tyrod Taylor.
Brutal.
That poor guy. It's happened to him so often too, like this. But it's also happened to Ryan Fitzpatrick. So like, I don't know. There's a weird spot in here where like you, I don't know. Like you kind of have to feel for some of these quarterbacks who are like starting caliber but not good enough to be your franchise, because this. Their lot in life is pretty difficult.
Oh, yeah.
For them, well, a lot.
It's difficult in that, like, okay, so here's what I will say. And I saw some people saying this, and it's a little harsh, but, like, I saw some people saying this where he goes, he said, I essentially got fired today or yesterday. And I was like, yeah, but with, like, the greatest severance package ever.
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah.
Like, you get to hold a clipboard and make, like, $8 million this year.
It's
like,
tough, but also very lucrative. So, yeah, maybe we're Maybe Fitz can just, you know, take some naps on some money and be fine.
Again, you're right. But to your point, it's the competitor, and he wants to play and all that stuff. It's really hard, and I love. And again, I started this by saying it really sucks because he was heartbroken by it. But standing on the sideline making $1 million is pretty good. That's not the worst severance package in the world. If I got fired, say, I would like to have that money to cry into.
Okay, Jim, one more national story that we have to address. We have to address it. Are the Colts going to go after Antonio Brown?
Uh, 100% no. Yeah, no, 100% no. I was going to leave wiggle room, but no, they're not.
Man. Guys, we've been doing like this. We're plenty far enough into the Chris Ballard era to know where that's not going to happen. Like, just –
no. Honestly, I don't want. I can't. We can't. I'm trying to figure out how to phrase this, but like, we know. We know they're not going to go after Antonio Brown. Can I say it that way? Is that fair?
And also, like, it's the right move to not go after him. Like, I know the Seahawks are talking about doing it, and the Seahawks team or whatever, and blah blah blah. Like, he torpedoed like three teams last year. Like, the risk you're taking isn't, like, it might not work out and he might not be that productive. Like the risk you're taking is that he turns your team into a circus for 5 weeks in the middle of the season.
It's like the least Colts culture-y Chris Ballard, Frank Reich move you could possibly imagine. I just can't. I can't see it. And again, this is just not something I'm very confident to say that they will not do this.
I also don't, there's also news out right now about Dez Bryant and the possibility that Dez Bryant is signing with the Baltimore's practice squad. Can we get away from the big names for a second? Like, just in terms of, like, every time there's a potential big name available, we're just like, oh, they've got to go get that guy. Dez Bryant hasn't played in 2.5 years. Maybe he's still good. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't see him as like the culture killer that I see Antonio Brown is, but No.
My bigger concern with Dez Bryant is just that he hasn't played in 2 years.
Yeah, can he play or not? I've actually been a huge fan of his, following him on Twitter. He's been interesting to follow. He hasn't been crazy. There's some good stuff that he puts out there. I'm a fan of Dez Bryant, but I don't necessarily think he's a fit for the Colts, much in the same way that I'm a fan of Le'Veon Bell, and I don't think he's a fit for the Colts.
Also, while he was not playing, he also tore his Achilles tendon.
Right. Also bad.
So, there's a lot of reasons. I know they're big names. I know they've been great in the past, but one of them might blow up your whole team.
Yeah, I don't even think Le'Veon Bell is that guy, honestly.
I don't think those guys blow up your whole team, but Antonio Brown could blow up your whole team. We saw him do it teams last year.
I can't see him getting along with multiple players on anyone. That team. Yeah, there's a few guys where I think they would clash immediately. So
and with Bryant, it's just a question of I think that's why you're seeing the Ravens are signing into the practice squad and not the actual roster.
Wait and see.
They have no idea what they're going to get from him.
Exactly. You let him run against NFL corners and then see what you got. I think that's probably – I mean, again, if the Colts did something like that, I'd be like, oh, okay, it's a fun experiment. But, I don't – yeah. I'd rather – we talked about – I'd rather see them, trade a fifth-round pick for Jameson Crowder. So versus that. Not that I think they need to, but that's kind of where I'm at. So any other national news that you want to get to before we go to our next segment here?
I do not think so. I think that's it. Other than a really in-depth discussion about Jameis Winston versus.
No, we're not doing that. Sorry, Joel. I will say we were going to.
People can type anything into Twitter and it will appear on the internet.
It just
shows right up.
It just should be blocked. I will say Joel and I had originally talked about what we're going to do on our bye weeks, but we have nothing interesting to tell you. I'm going to watch a lot of football and spend some time with my kid. I imagine that is a similar plan for what you're doing.
Yeah. No, normally on a bye week, I would go, I don't know, see a friend who's within driving distance or, do a trip or something like that. But it's just a weird year. It's not a year where that is as available as it has been in the past. So, Big Ten starts this weekend, World Series, NFL, NCAA, That's enough viewing for me right there.
Yeah, I'll tell you this. During the season, again, we're not, just kind of telling you guys what our schedules are. We generally work 6 days a week, Sunday through Friday. And then if we're traveling, Saturday too. So it ends up being a 7 day week. But for home games, it's usually Saturday's the day off. So this week, this week is I think it's the only week technically that we get 2 days off.
Technically, yeah.
So I'm excited about it. And like I said, I'm going to take full advantage by doing the thing I would have been doing on a Sunday anyway, which is watching football. I am irrationally excited for Titans Steelers. So
don't build it up too much. Cause then something's going to happen. It's going to be a blowout and you're going to have to switch.
Don't say that. I think it's one of the best games on the schedule this year. And I'm excited the Colts aren't playing so I can watch it.
It's a really fun litmus test game too, where we get to see these two teams that might be really good and figure out whether or not they're good and which ones, it's just an interesting AFC pecking.
Yeah. Plus I think we get to see strength versus strength a little bit. The Titans offense has been phenomenal, but they're going up and they don't have Taylor Lewan, but they get to go up against the best. I think I saw Robert Mays wrote a story about the best defensive front in the NFL in the Steelers. No Devin Bush, which is sad. I really wanted to watch him, but no Devin Bush, But still, TJ Watt, Steph Tuitt, Cam Hayward, like, I'm really excited to watch Bud Dupree. Like, I'm very excited to watch this.
And then, if you're a fan of points, the Seattle Seahawks play the Arizona Cardinals in the late game.
Yay, points. Bet the over.
What's the over-under on that game?
I could tell you.
Like 70?
I can tell you, if you're a fan of points, don't tune in Monday night to Rams Bears.
Is that Monday night or Sunday night? What's the Sunday night game?
I thought you just said it. Wasn't it Seahawks?
No, that's the Sunday afternoon. That's the late afternoon.
Oh, I don't know. I'm looking at the number now. I'm trying to find your. It's 56.5. That's a big number. Oh.
Hammer the over.
56.5 is a lot.
There's no way that both of those teams don't score 28 points.
Let's say 28-27 doesn't get it done. That's a 7-touchdown game. That's a lot. Woo.
Well, Russell Wilson is playing on full tilt. And more importantly, the Seahawks defense has given up 30 points, like almost every time. It feels like almost every, it hasn't been every timeout, but it feels every timeout. Like that team's going to give up. They've hit the over. If the over is 56, they've hit it most of the time this season. Then they've come close the other two times. So with Arizona's offense, yeah. Hammer the.
I like that, Joel.
Betting advice.
I was say Joel giving betting advice is like the most bye week thing ever because it's never going to happen again.
Also, it will inevitably someone will be mad at me. So, yeah. Somehow the Seahawks and Cardinals will play a 17-14 game.
All right, real quick, just for people listening, Sunday night Bucks Raiders, Monday night Bears Rams. So that's what you got for the national games. So
what's Sunday night?
Bucks Raiders should be fun.
Yeah, that's like a weirdly interesting game.
Yeah, that'll be a good litmus test for the Raiders too, and which is fun. It'll be good for the Colts fans to see what they're going to get in December. So we like that. All right, this is going to be the single longest podcast of all time because of these two segments. So we're going to get out of here. Enjoy the next segment with Daniel Bragg, our special guest. Yeah, enjoy it. Okay, for the second half of the Colts Cover 2 podcast, I am very excited to announce we have a special guest. Daniel Bragg is joining us on the podcast. This is kind of carrying this tradition that Joel started when I was away on paternity, where he had some guests, Colts fans on the show, and we talked, and they talked Colts and did a great job. So we thought we really wanted to keep that going. We haven't done as good a job as we were hoping, but we have the bye week. We thought this would be a good time to kind of get back to it. And so, Daniel, thank you for joining us and jumping on the Colts Cover 2 podcast with us.
Yeah, I appreciate the invite, guys. I'm looking real forward to discussing some Colts stuff with some Indy Star insiders.
Well, I mean, the first question that's obvious is who is your favorite host of the show? I'm just kidding. I mean, I guess it has to be Joel, and I get that because Joel is the one who picked you to come on the show, so he's got the inside track. Fair enough.
That's absolutely true. Yeah.
Daniel, tell us a little bit about yourself.
I am 31. I've lived in Indianapolis area all my life. I just recently graduated from Full Sail University with my bachelor's in sportscasting.
And Patrick.
Yeah. And I also, at least for the last 2 years, and I've got a game tomorrow, I've been doing the play-by-play for Sheridan High School football.
How's that going?
It's going great. Like I had experience in radio as far as doing color going back to high school, but I had never done play-by-play, and I reached out to the radio station that handles that for the last few years and just wanted experience. And it just so happened they were looking for somebody to do play-by-play altogether. Very so cool. They just threw me that opportunity. So yeah, it's been fun.
Toughest job in sports. I've said this for my entire life. I think talking for like 3 straight hours broadcasting is impossible. People are always like, oh, you said something stupid. I'm like, you talk for 3 hours without saying something stupid.
Yeah, I didn't understand just how much you don't feel like you're talking that much until after the game. All of a sudden you need water because your mouth is so dry.
Right. Right. I mean, I talk for an hour on this thing and I say multiple stupid things per podcast. So that's like, So let me ask you, can I ask you as a Colts fan, this is like something that Joel and I have talked about off podcast, but you said you grew up in Indianapolis all your life. How spoiled are you with quarterbacks? Seriously. Like, again, this is the guy who came up growing up in Chicago, and I've never had a quarterback that's ever been good. So like, where is the bar for you in terms of watching quarterbacks and your tolerance for bad quarterback play?
Well, I mean, with me, even though it's a lot because I grew up in Indy, but I also am a Packers fan. So I was born in 89, and the first game I remember watching was the Bears Packers game. And that's when I broke my dad's heart and decided I was a Packers fan because of Brett Favre. So like I grew up watching Brett Favre and then Peyton Manning in 98. And then, yeah. And then it became Aaron Rodgers and then now Andrew Luck. Like, yeah, I have no tolerance for bad quarterbacking, but at the same time, I understand like it's unfair that I would have that standard, but it's just, I've been spoiled absolutely my entire life.
I like that you have that awareness. That's good. I think there are some Colts fans who don't know that they're that spoiled.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. There's a lot of them that think that, all these teams just get gifted Hall of Fame quarterbacks. And it's like, no, we've just been extremely lucky.
So yeah, to get into like current Colts 2020, and I told you guys before we started recording, I'm going to use horrible bye week puns and ask you if you buy into things. Joel's already smirking and laughing at me. So yeah, that's it.
I told you this already, but I just love how hard, like there was just like a severe dad joker in gym that just been dying to get out for years.
Blossoming right now. I have the baby now.
And he just like, it's like as soon as you had the baby, it was just like, bam, it is time. You can't even embarrass the kid with the jokes yet. And you're just like full bore.
It's a wonderful thing because now I have like an excuse for making horrible jokes. So it feels great. But yeah, so we're going to do bi-week stuff. Buying into Colts, things that are happening. So the most important one at a 4-2 Colts team, I don't know if you want to go big picture first, you want to talk about Phillip Rivers, but I guess we'll just start big. Are you buying into this being like a good team, a playoff team?
Yes and no. And that's the thing. Like, you can't – really good teams don't show up in Jacksonville and get – look like they do, even though it's the first game of the season. And then – The Browns game sent a message that's like, oh God, and maybe this team is not really as good as we've all been sold that they are. At 4-2, I mean, it's still not a bad record by the bye, but we all know their record, or I mean, their schedule on the second half of the season's harder, but I think there's still a lot of, I mean, this team could be okay, and I still think they could win 9 or 10 games because of their schedule. So, I mean, are they good enough to win the AFC? No, but I mean, at least that's my thought right now. But I mean, I think, are they good enough to make the playoffs and win the division still, even though the Titans are undefeated? Yeah.
So tell me why you think the Titans are going to fall off, because Jim has been picking on me because I said, I didn't think the Titans were any good at the beginning of the season. And now they're undefeated.
Well, I mean, I think Titans, they're limited. I don't know if Ryan Tannehill's as good as he's looked. And, you know, eventually the amount of workload that they're asking of their running back is just, I think eventually it's going to start falling off, and they've gotten lucky in a few of their games too. So, I mean, it's all been close, and I just think, I don't know, maybe it's because we've been watching the Titans for so long now that I just believe eventually the Titans fall off, but like historically the Titans don't stay this good for that long. So, I mean, it's probably a little bit of that.
That's See, fair. My thing is, I don't believe in their defense at all right now. I could be wrong, but I feel like their defense is just hemorrhaging yards and points anytime they go up against anybody. And I feel like that's going to catch up with them. I don't know if it catches up with them enough to – I mean, there's been lots of offense teams that, ended up 12-4, 13-3, but it seems like – but it almost cost them last week. They almost lost to the Texans last week because they gave up 36 points. So that's my thing with the Titans. I think I'm starting to come around. I'm starting to come over to Jim's belief in the Titans. But if they go down, if they fall off, I think it's going to be because they can't stop people.
One, I don't have to defend myself because the 5-0 record does that for me. And two, I'm going to dock points because the entire time you kept saying you believe in the Titans, and I stress hard, it's buy into the Titans. That's what
we're doing. Oh, that's right.
So when you ask about the Titans, could you please next time refer to it? Are you buying the Titans 5-0?
That's on me. That's on me. The whole segment was set up.
I work hard for these ideas. I think over them at night, and they come to me just before the podcast starts, and I really want you to just play along, and so we have something there. But no, to get back to the Colts and to our theme, Daniel, I want to ask you about Philip Rivers, because the last game he played was phenomenal. It was not the Philip Rivers that we had seen the first 5 weeks of the season, and now the Colts are – I mean, Joel and I were kind of marveling about this before, but they're like two massively different offenses than they were last year. So right last year, they finished 31st in explosive pass plays. Right now they're eighth. And so that would prove that they haven't, it wasn't just Sunday that they were creating these explosive pass plays, but no run game this year, really a great run game last year. It's like, it's been almost two totally different offenses. Are you buying that the Colts can keep this going, win 10 games with this completely different offense than we've seen versus what they did last season?
Yeah, because I mean, I think the biggest difference between the explosive plays, I think, is the quarterback. You know, Brissett, credit for what he can do. He we know what he is, and he's a backup quarterback. I mean, he's not Philip Rivers even. And a lot of people I saw last week, or, you know, 2 weeks ago, saying that we should bench him and bring in Brissett. I'm like, so that we can continue to do the exact same thing. Like, it's not like it's going to change much, you know, and especially I don't think we should be wasting time with Brissett when we got Eason. But that's a whole nother thing. I think they can win 10 games with Philip Rivers. I thought that when they signed Philip Rivers. Now, do they need to stop throwing the ball 40 times a game? Yes. But and really figure out how to get Nyheim Hines a part of this offense like he was in week one rather than what he has been since. I think that's a big thing. But I mean, the whole offense is not Philip, and that's kind of what it has been before leading up to the bye, is they've tried to make it all about Philip, and that's not the success that he's going to be able to bring. Like, I forget, I heard after their first or maybe their second law after the Browns, they were talking about, you know, his usage rate on the radio or something like that, and how when he throws the ball more than 40 times, he's got basically a crap record. And it's like, well, yeah, because he's a risk taker, and that's what you want out of a gunslinger. But the thing is, it's just like in every case of any gunslinger, he's going to turn the ball over. So, you know, you've got to, he's going to make great plays, but he's also going to make mistakes. And the longer that you ask him to just keep making all those plays and put all the focus on him, he's going to, and especially at his age, it's going to get worse. So, I mean, with Phil, yes, they can win 10 games, but I don't know if this, the way that they have structured this offense the last few weeks, is sustainable.
Well, I think part of it is that they've got to figure out what's going on with this running game. They just haven't been very successful this season at all. I think part of what, you know, they got behind the last 2 weeks, I think that's part of it. But I also think that in the second half there, especially against Cincinnati, like there were a couple times on that last drive that they tried to run and went for -1 or 0. You know, everybody hates when they run it on second and long. So then it's second and 11 or whatever, and they have to throw, because if they don't, Twitter will hate them. I agree that they've got to figure out a way to take some of the pressure off of him, but they've got to do it by being more consistent in the running game. It's got to be light years better than it's been. I mean, they're like 26th in run and 31st in yards per carry, Jim?
I actually had that up right now. So they are 3.6 yards per carry, which is, 26th. Yeah, you are correct. 26th, it looks like, in close to both. They're at 98 yards per game, which is, I mean, just ridiculous compared to what they were last year.
Last year they were at 133.
Yeah.
Sometimes I watch other games, and I watch somebody else's running game like really get going good, where it's ripping off chunks on every play. And it's just even more stark how different this running game has been this year. It just feels like everything is so hard. Whereas like sometimes you're just watching like I think the one that stuck out to me was a couple of weeks ago. The Vikings were playing the Seahawks. They ended up losing that game, but like it looked like every time I looked up, they were breaking through a huge hole for like 8 yards, and it felt like what we saw last year, and we just haven't seen it this year from the Colts.
Daniel, I wanted to go back a little bit because, and again, this is not, I'll say this now, it shouldn't be a relevant topic this year just because Philip Rivers has never gotten hurt ever. And I don't think the Colts are pulling him out of this game, but I wanted to know what your thoughts are, just because it's been a popular topic in Indianapolis, is what your thoughts are on Jacob Eason, because Joel just wrote a story about him yesterday about kind of how the Colts are bringing him along. He wrote about one ahead of the season about how they're bringing him along. What are your hopes for Jacob Eason? What were they, I guess, before the draft, now that you end, and now that he's kind of in this redshirt year? I know you mentioned this compared to Jacoby Brissett, but you don't have to do that. But yeah, where are you on Jacob Eason and your hopes for the future with the Colts quarterbacking position?
Well, I mean, obviously Phil was brought in kind of as a holdover, and you know, when Phil's having a bad game at this point, I mean, you spent a draft pick on getting Jacob Eason. Now, I admittedly didn't watch a lot of Eason before draft, but you know, I trust Chris Ballard, and if he thinks that Jacob Eason is worth a draft pick, that leads me to believe, at least, that even though he was drafted in I think the fourth round, it doesn't really, you really truly believe at least he's going to be a quality backup. And when people mention putting Brissett back in, that just, I'm like, that doesn't make any sense why you would spend the draft pick and then not be using the guy that at least some of us presume was at least possibly the future. And I mean, you haven't seen what he is. So, I mean, my hope for Jacob Eason is, yeah, he ends up being this starter that you can get out of the fourth round and ends up being some great quarterback, you know. And I don't know how he's going to look because we haven't seen him on the field, but you know, I don't want to do what we did last year and just keep putting Brissett out there and watching him not throw it down the field and miss wide open guys. And I mean, again, I like Jacoby Brissett. He's a great locker room guy. And he, for what, you know, I guess for what you would ask of a guy to come in a backup situation, it worked for a few games, but on the whole, it's just not a starting quarterback situation. So when they bring in Eason again, when you know you have Jacoby, it leads my logic, at least, that they don't want him to be the next guy. They bring in Eason to groom him to be the next guy.
So Joel, I was not a very big fan of Jacoby Brissett, the quarterback, especially toward the end of last year. So my question to you is that in response to what Daniel said, is that, cause I know you don't, I don't think you want to see much more Jacoby either, though. Then again, I know that you think he is a backup and would be the guy they put in if Rivers went down. Or so my question to you is then, maybe to make this a little more complicated, a little more interesting of an answer, is to say, is there a week this season where you think it's realistic that Jacob Eason could surpass Jacoby Brissett as the backup quarterback?
Everything I think I get from the Colts is that they're trying to give him a true redshirt experience. The way Patrick Mahomes almost had, he played at the very end of the season that year for Kansas City. But I think that's what they're trying to do. And I think part of it just has to do with unless you were going to be the starter going in or the top backup or get a lot of reps, it was just a bad year. It's just a bad year to be a rookie quarterback. You know, just a lot of the stuff that he's learning and trying to figure out right now is stuff that maybe he would have had a jump start on doing by watching them play in OTAs and stuff like that, in terms of knowing what checks to make, what calls to make. I think that he's impressed them with how he's done it, but he's still never thrown a pass against another NFL team in a game. There was no preseason for him to sort of wow everybody and make you think, okay, he's farther along than we thought. There's no, he didn't throw the ball much in practice. Cause there was only 2 weeks. I think 2 weeks versus, it's almost like 6 weeks of training camp is such a big difference. I think they're trying to protect Jacob Eason a little bit. You know, I think they're trying to protect him in the hopes of giving him the best shot to succeed. So I think for him to end up being the top backup, because he's not really taking many snaps in practice right now. He's taking like a handful of scout team snaps every once in a while. I think for him to surpass him as the backup, that would have to change. First of all, he's got to start taking more reps as in practice, but also I think it would have to be a serious injury to Rivers, not just like a one or two game thing. I think it'd have to be really, really bad, because I think they're really trying to give Eason the best chance to develop, which sometimes I don't know if everybody subscribes to this, but I do think you can play a quarterback too fast. I think you can play him too fast and essentially ruin him. And I think that everything from the Colts seems to be that they're trying to, you know, pump the brakes and give him time to develop. I say that, Daniel, just Jim is not lying. Like I've seen enough of the Jacoby Brissett offense or whatever it is to, I don't really want to see that, but I think they're trying to, like I said, I think they're trying to give Jacob Eason the best chance long-term as opposed to short-term.
So the only thing I would add, I guess, on that is that I think there's the only chance we see Jacob Eason this year is if things go completely off the rails. And if this is like a 6-9 team or a 6-8 team, I guess, going into the final few weeks, and then maybe you throw him out there and give him a couple games to see what he's got, what he's like. But other than
like a Will Greer situation last year in Carolina.
Kind of. No, that didn't go too well.
Yeah. And I didn't throw that. When I say I want to see Jacob Eason, I mean, like if Phil goes down or he's having such a bad game that the game's already out of hand, throw him in. Like if they're still winning and Phil gets injured, yeah, play Jacoby. But I mean, yeah, I meant like garbage time and all that. Yeah. I don't want to see Jacoby go out there because there's nothing to be gained if the game's already decided.
I like that. I actually do. I think that's an interesting point, is that if you're cruising by 30 or if you're down by 30, then maybe why not get Jacob Eason some snaps? What are you going to lose? So that's an interesting point. I actually kind of like that. So we'll move on to I want to get to that. We kind of mentioned the run game. I want to talk about the weapons real quick. Are you guys buying that Phillip Rivers can get this done with Marcus Johnson, Zach Pascal, and boy, this is just dead. Oh, here we go. Ready? The ghost of T.Y. Hilton.
Oh, wow.
Sorry.
Oh, Jim. Wow.
You guys all got ready for that. I'm excited. No, I don't think he's done or toast. But I couldn't. I'm just going to be honest with you. That probably goes against how I actually feel about T.Y. Hilton. I just couldn't resist the pun. So there you go.
No, I mean.
I do think that we're at the point now with Hilton where I think I'm starting to wonder if he's a little bit different. If he's starting to lose it a little bit. Where are you, Daniel?
I mean, I didn't see this coming at all. But I mean, yeah, he's got 10 more targets than Naheem on the season, and yet Naheem's got more catches. Like, and I realize they're probably little dump offs and whatnot, but still, like, T.Y.'s always been Old Faithful. Like, he was gonna catch the ball if you threw it his way, and I mean, he did have some drops last year that were like, ugh. But I mean, he always does. But at the same time, he makes the big time catches. And then this year, I mean, it's almost like he just can't catch anything. Like, I don't know what it is. I don't know if it's age, because I mean, I know he's 31, but he hasn't hardly been hit. Like, you should be able to still catch at 31. I don't think it's his age. I don't know what it is. I don't know if it's the way Phil throws, but I mean, again, once it hits your hands, you're, as a wide receiver, that, I mean, it doesn't matter. It hits your hands, catch it. And I don't know what's going on with T.Y. I don't know if it's chemistry, timing. I don't know. T.Y. has been the one thing this season that has absolutely left me scratching my head. Like nothing with Phil has made me scratch my head. We knew what he was when he came into town. Jonathan Taylor, you know, he's been as good as he's expected I really to be, and T.Y. is really the big stick out on this offense, and it's like I have no logical reason why he would be performing as bad as he has been.
The thing that jumped out to me, I think, was that they threw for 370 yards the other day and he only had one catch. And I'm sure that, you know, T.Y. had a history of being kind of boom or bust, but like, I don't think that there were that many of those games where they could throw for that many yards and he have only one catch. And I know Frank Reich said that he made a lot of impact in that game. I think he did get held in that game. I don't know what's going on with the penalties. People are really like are holding him and drawing. He's drawing flags a lot. But yeah, it was just different to watch the Colts throw for 370 yards. And essentially for a while there, Rivers did whatever he wanted to in the passing game. And then look up at the end of the game and Hilton only has one catch. That was when I started going, okay, so do we need to start thinking about him differently? It's been a long time. It's been back to the end of the 2018 season since we've seen T.Y. Hilton look like T.Y. Hilton.
For sure. And I guess I'll give the other argument that Frank Reich made was that there was a 20-yard play that Zach Pascal got called for offensive pass interference that got called back. There was a touchdown that got called back because Anthony Costanzo weirdly wandered into the end zone. I think it was an RPO, so that's why he kind of blocked up field and they got called for a legal man downfield that erased a T.Y. Hilton touchdown. So he was a little bit more involved, and then there was a few things that just kind of went weirdly awry. But to your point, I think Frank Reich said the same thing. He went to the box score and saw that T.Y. Hilton had one catch and was really mad at himself, like just kind of didn't get him involved in a game that it felt like there was every reason to get him involved. So I kind of think in terms of total weaponry, I feel a lot better. It's weird because I think there's been almost as many injuries this year, minus T.Y. But I think I feel more confident in what the Colts can do going forward just because of Marcus Johnson. You kind of have Marcus Johnson to me is kind of like the 2020 Zach Pascal, and you still have Zach Pascal, who's, you know, old, reliable, and they have those two guys they can count on. They have an emerging tight end group with, they didn't have Trey last year. And he's coming along. They still have Mo. They still have Jack. I kind of feel more confident even with the injuries to Pittman, who should be back after the bye, and Campbell, that they'll be okay this year in terms of weapons. I don't think that's going to be maybe the excuse we made for the Colts last year.
Yeah, I mean, I'm confident that these – I mean, would you like and that the problem is with when you bring up weapons, and especially with fans, is a lot of times we go straight to, well, who's got name recognition? But, I mean, name recognition doesn't mean you got a great cast. I mean, you got to make your name at some point. And, yeah, with Marcus Johnson coming out, I think Pittman was doing great before his injury. Like, they've got weapons, and I'm much more confident in – even as weird as it sounds without Mac, I mean, the running backs I'm more confident in, even though they haven't had a great running season. But we kind of knew again with Phil coming in, going back to Austin Eckler, like the way that he uses running backs is not the way in an offense with Phillip Rivers, the way he uses running backs is not going to be the way that you expect running backs to be used. They use more little dump offs and screen passes than they do running it straight up the middle. But everything else, as far as wide receivers and tight ends, I think the tight end group, when they're all healthy, is probably one of the best that they've had as far as three deep, being with Mo, Trey, and Doyle. And then wide receivers, again, you know, you got T.Y. He's not performing that great. Michael was coming out great until his injury. And then I can't think of the guy. Paris Campbell, you know, getting injured too. You think those are your big three, and then two of them are injured and one of them is not having a good year. And then they just kind of, and I was impressed last game with how more guys that you didn't necessarily know were stepping up and making five and four catches and for a lot of yards. So, you know, it did make me feel a lot better about the options that this team has at skill positions. And I think, yeah, with these weapons and with Pittman coming back, and I think T.Y. eventually, you just got to believe at some point he's going to have a 5-6 catch game with 100 yards and a touchdown at least. You know, like I think it's going to happen at some point this season. It's just we're unfortunately going to have to ride however long this little dry spell goes.
I'm with you. I think you're right. I think T.Y. is going to have one of those games. Could be against Detroit coming up here. They don't have a great defense, and there's every reason that they should get going or at least be able to continue what they did against the Bengals, even though, again, that was kind of a weird – flip the script game in that Cincinnati should have been able to be run on and not passed on, but hey, that's what Frank Reich does sometimes. So let's move to the other side of the ball. I get the first question I think you have to ask at the bye week is has DeForest Buckner been, are you buying that he's been everything that the Colts said he would be?
No, but at the same time, I mean, he's hit the quarterback 13 times. So, I mean, like he's putting more pressure on him, but I mean, yeah, when you're looking at a stat sheet, does he have a whole lot of sacks? I mean, I'm looking at it right now. He's got 2.5. So, I mean, he's still, I think, leading the team in sacks, which is, you know, I guess what you bring him in to do. But at the defensive tackle, like what you're really trying to do is stuff the run. And has that been as successful? I don't have those stats in front of me, but I mean, like it just feels like maybe, but yeah, he's when you trade what you did to get him, you're expecting to see his name and hear his name a lot. And, you know, I think he's doing his job and what this defense necessarily wants him to do. But I mean, I think when everyone saw him come in, they were expecting like, oh, this is going to be like another Dwight Freeney or Robert Mathis, or we're going to hear his name multiple times every single game. And I don't think you're going to get that out of a defensive tackle. He's in there. Yes, he's putting pressure on, but you know, that's not necessarily what his forte is. Now, again, this defensive line as a whole, I think has been much better. And I think it's because of DeForest Buckner being there that they have to account for him. So it's making it easier on the other guys. So, I mean, I think he's adding more to the team than what the stat sheet can ever show to anybody.
I think that's a good conclusion. Joel, I know Joel. I'm almost 100% positive Joel agrees.
I kind of totally buy DeForest Buckner so far, just in terms of I think he's having more of an impact than maybe it seems like on the stat sheet. I saw somebody, I can't remember who it was, but somebody national was saying that they think he's probably playing better than any tackle other than Aaron Donald, which is pretty much what they brought him in to do. But yeah, I mean, an interior tackle, you're not going to get, just those games where he's there. You see him like every time because they're going to double him all the time. They're probably doubling him about 50% of the time. The Colts do a lot of interesting stuff to him in one-on-one situations. I think their favorite is when they overload one side. So they put Danico Autry on the center and then Buckner can slide out. And so they have to, so they've got the end on the tackle and Buckner on the guard and then Autry's on the center. So if they want to double him, they've got a chip or slide or something. But yeah, I don't know that you're ever going to see him. It's really hard for a defensive tackle to get like 15 sacks, Aaron Donald notwithstanding. I think sometimes we forget just how otherworldly Aaron Donald is. There's just not really anybody like that in the NFL other than him in terms of sacks. I'm going to look up real quick while I'm sitting here. I know the other one is Chris Jones, who the Colts never really at because Kansas City was never letting him go. But he's got 3.5 sacks, 7 quarterback hits. So, I mean, right around the same production, really. Not nearly as many tackles or anything, but right around the same type of production. It's about what we expected out of DeForest Buckner.
Yeah, I wondered if you guys thought, and again, I was actually going back and watching a lot of the tape from the last couple of days, and I was trying to find evidence of this, and it's kind of hard to find direct evidence of it, but I think that he is a direct impact, and this is one of the things I think we guess might happen, which is that he would create more turnovers just by disrupting quarterbacks and helping the defensive line disrupt quarterbacks. Now, weirdly, this team has not recovered a fumble, which is the strangest thing to me, through 6 games.
That never underestimate how much this bothers Jim.
It's incredible. How can you not have recovered? There's got to be some fumble loss at all. But again, it's yeah, whatever. It's mind boggling to me. But no, the thing is, they have 10 interceptions, and I don't think that Xavier Rhodes. We can get into the secondary in a little bit, but I don't think the fact that Xavier Rhodes is having a resurgent season is not in any way attached to having DeForest Buckner and an improved defensive line. I think those things go hand in hand together. I don't know what you guys think.
No, I mean, absolutely. Again, 13 quarterback hits. I mean, he's leading the defensive line in tackles. He's doing what you needed him to do, and that was rush the QB. Yeah, he's not getting to him, but he's making the quarterbacks make bad decisions by rushing them, which is, again, the job of the defensive line. Like, everybody wants every defensive line to get sacks at crazy rates, but it's just that's not necessarily their job. Their job is to put pressure and make the quarterback make the mistake. And yeah, I think absolutely Xavier Rhodes, like, I was excited when they signed Xavier Rhodes, and a guy at work was telling me, you know, well, he hasn't been good. I'm like, just chill, like, he'll be all right. And I really truly believe that he was still a good DB. And yeah, he's shown that, yes, he is produced at a rate that everyone can be happy with a DB, but at the same time, yeah, you're absolutely right. I think he is benefiting greatly from this defensive line being able to put additional pressure on the quarterback.
Shout out to Daniel for seeing the Xavier Rhodes signing as you're better off than me or Jim were. We were both very skeptical.
Yeah, I was assigning. I'm going to assign Daniel. He's officially a your guy. Joel and I have a lot of your guy. That's my guy. Xavier Rhodes is officially a Daniel Bragg guy. That's it.
I'm perfectly fine with that because, again, like I watched him, you know, as a Packer fan, I saw him. And I'm like, I know he hasn't been great the last few years, but I'm like, he can still, and I'm not looking for an all-pro guy out of the Colts. I think he could become one if he's got additional help, like the defensive line, and like he's been performing. But I'm like, no, he when we signed him, I'm like, he's still better than most of the options that they have at DB. So I loved the signing. Even if he was down from, even if he had maintained what he was still an improvement over in the DB position for this team.
Hey, so this is a great question for you then, because you're an NFC North guy. Both like Joel and I were both raised in the NFC North as well. But NFC North, what is the biggest difference that you're seeing with Xavier Rhodes versus the way Minnesota is using him and the way Matt Eberflus is using him in the Colts defense?
I don't know that there's a huge difference. I think he might have been nursing injuries the last few years or something. Like, it was just he wasn't getting as much coverage. And also, again, that I think it is a lot of the additional pressure the Colts are getting on the quarterback. You know, with Minnesota, he wasn't getting any help defensively. Like, if the quarterback can sit back there and just wait and wait and wait for your guy to get open, DBs – there, even the best DB, he can't do his job. I mean, it's going to look like he can't do his job because he can cover him for 5 seconds. But eventually, an NFL wide receiver, no matter how good he is, he's going to be able to find a hole to get open. So, you know, if you're not forcing the quarterback to get rid of the ball, DBs are going to struggle. And I think that's one of the reasons why you saw the struggles from Xavier Rhodes, because when the Vikings were able to get pressure on the quarterback, it went in his younger years and whatnot. He looked great. And that's, again, because a byproduct of what the defensive line's doing. So, I mean, when the Colts signed him and then they got DeForest Buckner, whichever order it was, we knew DeForest Buckner and Xavier Rhodes was going to be here. It helped me a little bit more feel more confident that Xavier Rhodes is going to be able to pop off.
Joel, I was going to say, I mean, we've moved on to the secondary. I'm fine with that. I'm going to ask you guys about specific players in a second, but anything that you've seen too, again, I think that's a great point on the defensive line putting or alleviating some of the pressure off of the secondary, but anything you're seeing from Matt Eberflus or from Xavier Rhodes particularly, I mean, we know he likes to gamble a little bit, take risks, and that seems to be working. Is there anything you're seeing from him that you think is making him more successful these first six games?
Well, I don't think that the Colts aren't asking him to follow the best receiver all over the field. That's really hard.
Yeah,
I don't know how much. I'll be honest. I didn't watch enough of the Vikings the last couple of years to know that that's what they were doing. But that's what they used to do with him. And if they were asking him to do that, it's really hard to do that on a year. But it's really hard to beat Darrelle Revis on a year by year basis. It's very, very difficult. And so he hasn't been doing that in Indianapolis. He's pretty much only been to the one side. He's pretty much only played to one side. He said it for straight out. Like the first time we talked to him after he got back for training camp we said, what's the difference in this scheme? He said, it's a lot easier.
Yeah.
And so you're seeing him not have to be so locked in this one-on-one war that the Vikings used to put him in. And he gets more chances to look at the quarterback. He's not in man as much. Then he can do some of the gambling stuff that we've seen. He can bring his experience to bear on some of these guys. He's a veteran who knows a lot about football. And the hard thing about man is that your instincts in terms of going and getting the football are not – that they're minimized in man because your job is specifically to stick to one guy, but you're seeing him now can play off zone and play with his eyes at the quarterback, you're seeing he can make more plays on the ball. He said he wanted to make more plays on the ball coming in. He leads the team with 8 passes defended and the 2 picks, almost had a third one. In a way, he kind of predicted his own resurgence here. Now that I think about it, the first time we talked to him after the summer, he basically laid out why he would be better in this defense, and it's showing up.
All right, I'm going to make you guys make a hard decision here. In my opinion, on the defense, there have been one guy that has been better than I expected, or at least kind of broke out in a bigger way than I was looking for this year at each level of the defense. I'm going to say that was Grover Stewart on the defensive line so far. It's been incredible against the run. They're third against the run right now, the Colts. On the next level, I'm going to go with Bobby Okereke as a guy that has had just an outstanding developmental season and is getting in the way in pass lanes and has been really good in man coverage. And at the next level, I think it's obviously Julian Blackmon. And so what I'm going to make you guys do is pick one, is who you're buying is going to make the biggest impact from now into the end of the season. Or there's somebody else, but I think those are the three.
I mean, of those three, just because of the position, I'd say, well, but then again, I think Okereke is doing incredible, and I liked him last year in camp. But at the same time, I think, you know, he is getting more action, especially now while Darius Leonard's out. And when Darius Leonard gets healthy, hopefully they continue to use Okereke because, yeah, he's been a standout guy. Grover's done an excellent job shutting down the defense, or shutting down the run game. And, you know, Blackmon, I love Julian Blackmon. I knew very little about Julian Blackmon when he showed up in Indy. And then I was at the Minnesota game when it was really like his coming out because of the injury. I think defensively in the DB position, because they've been so impactful already this season, I think Julian Blackmon at safety is probably the most impactful. Just because he's been able to force turnovers at this point and well defended over the top and everything, he's doing exactly what you would expect a safety to do. And I really like his production so far this year, and I think it could continue. And again, as a rookie, the longer you do it, the better it gets. So yeah, I think Julian Blackmon on the whole on the rest of the season, because again, I think teams are eventually going to be able to run against the Colts. I'm not saying it's going to be at a high level, but I like what Grover Stewart is doing at nose tackle. But, you know, I think a little bit of it, eventually teams are going to be able to figure out how to run against them. But you can't make up for a great safety back there watching all the DBs backs. So, I mean, this defensive backfield, I think, is showing that they are one of at least the top 10 in the league, in my opinion.
Well, that's going to hurt you because he took Julian Blackmon from you, and I'm pretty sure that was the guy you would have picked. So,
Oh, yeah. Well, I can pick the same person out of the three you gave.
All right, go ahead.
You only gave us three. No, it's
Blackmon. Make your case for Julian Blackmon, and I'll make a case for one of the other guys.
It's Blackmon because it's Blackmon, and Jim knows this, but it has a lot to do with something that's just vexed me for 2 years with the Colts defense, that they've been playing zone and there's this hole in the 15 to 20 yard range in the middle of the field that they just never really covered consistently up until this year. And it drove me nuts because like everyone just says it's because they're playing soft zone, but no one actually wants to give up 15, 20 yard chunks. That's a chunk play. And I've always wondered who was supposed to be there. And now I know because Julian Blackman's closed it. Safeties are supposed to be there. He hasn't closed it every time. I thought the Bengals exploited it a little bit this past game. But he's done a lot better job of closing it than Malik Hooker did, just to be frank. And if you take away that spot from this defense, it makes this defense a lot – or from offenses, that makes this defense a lot better. And I think you're getting to see a little bit more of what – this defense is actually designed to look like when they're in zone. It's what it's actually supposed to look like. It's not supposed to be guys just running free in that 15 to 20 yard range. You're supposed to be someone coming down the ball. That's where Blackmon's made both of his interceptions. That's where he's made most of his big hits. So yeah, no, that's it's Blackman. Bobby Okereke is really, really good in coverage.
Hey, don't infringe on my guy here. That's gonna be my guy.
Well then take you got him. We Daniel went with Julian Blackman. You can go with Okereke.
I'm going with Bobby because of one of the reasons that you said real quick on the outplaying Malik Hooker thing. I'm gonna throw it out there. I think Malik was maybe never the same guy after the torn ACL his rookie season. Anyone, where do we think on that? Because I just thought he had three interceptions his first four games. He was as impactful. I know people don't believe this, but he was almost or close to as impactful as Blackman has been in his first few games in the NFL. And then disaster struck Malik Hooker. You guys have been watching for the last few years. Do you think that, I mean, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe that's you don't want to let him off the hook that way. But do you think that's the thing that maybe that was just a big injury that set him back forever?
It might be. And he's never really been fully healthy since then because he's gotten banged up a lot since then too. But it might be that. But I don't think that precludes you from saying that Blackman is playing better than Hooker did the last 2 years. It just explains why Hooker wasn't as good as his reputation.
What do you think, Daniel? I was just curious. Do you think that was an injury thing, or do you think it just came down to skill?
Well, I mean. Yeah, he looked great in all of the seven games that he played in 2017, but at the same time, yeah, I didn't really watch him in college, and I mean he looked great until he got injured, but he's kind of statistically he's been the exact same guy he's gotten two interceptions the last 2 years and three in those seven games, but I mean other than that I think he is what he is. I don't know if that's due to a talent level or whatnot, but I mean, yeah, I think Joel pointed out perfectly. I mean, Blackman is filling that hole where as a guy that, you know, we've all been watching football for years. That's where a safety is supposed to be. And Hooker wasn't there a lot of times. So, I mean, I don't know if they were asking him to do more as far as trying to stop the run. So like he was playing up farther. I don't know what it was. But at least now Blackman is where you would expect the safety to be on the field, being able to shut down those 15, 20 yard gains. So again, I don't know if that's coaching. I don't know what that is, but without a doubt, I think Blackman has performed on a better level than Hooker has.
I agree. I think that's a great point. I will say that I think they have asked him to do a little bit less. I think they're letting him play that free, play that deep middle or deep third sometimes. And we haven't even seen, I don't think we've seen cornerback Julian Blackman yet, which I'm excited to see. He played a lot of that in college, and they haven't really asked him to do a lot of matching up yet. So that'll happen. My pushback on this thing that has befuddled Joel on those 15 to 20-yard plays and why I'm going to go a little bit with Bobby Okereke is that I think some of those times, again, you're not wrong. The safety needs to be there and break up those plays. But sometimes a linebacker can get a little more depth and take away those plays and make those throws a little bit harder. I don't think Anthony Walker – flourishes in that area. I just don't think he's very good. He's okay in pass coverage. He's not my favorite. I think Darius Leonard is a good man-to-man guy. I think sometimes he gets a little bit lost in space sometimes. But I think Bobby Okereke is really, really flashing as a coverage linebacker. And I think he's one of the reasons you're seeing some of those passes taken away. But the one of the reasons I love him is the way that they're able to use him. And again, I think that we're going to start seeing him all over the place. We're seeing in the NFL, obviously more passing, people getting more creative with tight ends and backs. Bobby Okereke is the kind of guy who can erase those things. He's going to be the guy that when you're going up against the Ravens or you're going up against the Packers who love throwing to the running backs, Bobby Okereke is going to be a huge component to the defensive strategy of shutting those teams down, and especially playoff teams later in the year. Those are going to be teams, the types of teams they see in the playoffs. So I love that he is able to erase certain X factors for offenses. And again, we saw him kind of flourish in the middle when Darius Leonard was out, as Daniel pointed out. Guy had 10 tackles. He should have had an interception if he had all of his digits working and not a cast on one of them. He would have had two picks in two games. So I just think he's having a huge impact in the middle of the field. And him and Darius for the next however many years, depending on, you know, the contracts that Ballard will hand them in terms of extensions, I think they're going to be so fun to watch flying around the field, those two linebackers. And again, all due respect to Anthony Walker, I think he's a very good player. But I think skill set-wise, we've seen it. Bobby has some, like, as Chris Ballard said, he's got something special in his body.
Yeah, when I see Anthony Walker, I think of a more traditional linebacker, whereas he's running to the ball in the run game and making sure they don't get to the second level, all that stuff. And That's kind of the thing with Darius and Bobby and Anthony. They're three different kinds of linebackers. So, I mean, and I think Eberflus is acknowledging that and making those decisions in his personnel, depending on the play and depending on the scenario and situation. So, I mean, to that, Eberflus is doing a great job. And yeah, like you were saying, I think Okereke in pass coverage is a superior linebacker. I think, that Darius is an all around. I mean, he's just an all around stud at linebacker, but he's just as good against the run as against the pass. But I mean, sometimes when you're that good on both sides, it doesn't mean you're great at one. It just means he's great, but I mean, you know what I'm saying? So, yeah. And then Anthony, again, in those down situations where they're likely going to run the ball, I think Anthony Walker is a great guy to put out there to be able to shut that down, because I think that's just his play style.
I don't want to – we're not besmirching Anthony Walker, Joel, so don't you worry. But real quick, before we move on, before everybody thinks that we didn't – you know, you guys took Black and I took Bobby. Give us a minute on Grover and how important he's been to the defense before I ask Daniel to do something to close out the show that I would never ask you to do.
Well, it's just Grover really – he really made a big leap last year, and – I don't necessarily know that what he does is very obvious, but there's just clogging he does in the middle that really you saw that they didn't have last year, and it's why he took over for Marcus Hunt when Marcus Hunt was struggling at nose tackle. He's been so good against the run. He showed a little bit of pass rush last year that we haven't really gotten to see yet. The thing he does in the running game is he takes on blocks, and then somebody like Buckner can sort of flow almost like a linebacker who's playing up. You see Buckner make a lot of tackles that way, just kind of coming down the line of scrimmage or running, because Stewart's the guy who just gums everything up, and he's been really, really good at it. And they're, would you say, third in the league in run defense?
Third in run defense, yep.
Their third and run defense hasn't been perfect, but like they've been pretty good. And a lot of that has to do with Grover Stewart.
All right, Daniel, we're going to close this thing out by making you make predictions, which is the one thing Joel hates most in the world. So what I'm going to do is make this really hard on you and make you do something that is not fair at all. And Joel is going to sit back and smile and be happy that it's not him doing it. Are you ready? I'm going to go game by game the next 10 games. I'm going to make you call win-loss for the Colts and see where you end up.
All right.
Colts and Lions after the bye.
Win.
Colts and Ravens at home.
Loss.
All right, so 1-1. Colts at Titans. That's 4 days later, by the way.
Loss.
Woo! 1-2. Colts hosting the Packers, your Packers, on November 22nd.
Loss.
So 1-3. Joel, help me with math. Where does I put them at?
At that point, they're 5-5.
So how much are we panicking at this point? And by we, I mean Colts fan base, Daniel.
Colts fan base starts panicking.
I'll go further than that. What I've learned from the Colts fan base this year is that the moment they lose any game, the Colts fan base will start panicking. So by this point, things are getting burned down.
Yeah, they lose three straight, and yeah, they're going to want to burn down everything.
This is fun. We should have started with this. Okay. Okay. So a week later, they're on a horrible three-game losing streak. They get to host the Titans again on November 29th.
They win that one.
Okay, 6-5. Everybody takes a collective sigh of relief. Maybe a little. I don't know.
No, Jim, you're getting Colts fans wrong here. That win will not be the sigh of relief. People
won't. Doesn't count. Okay.
They'll be absolutely losing their minds.
This is a game that I think is going to be way tougher than people think there is going to be. But I'm not saying they can't win. Dan, you get to make the ultimate decision on this. But Colts at Texans on December 6th.
Win.
7-5. Where are you on the Texans?
I think the Texans, they've highlighted just how important your number one wide receiver is when he's the best wide receiver in the league. I mean, getting rid of him and all of a sudden, I mean, and Deshaun Watson might eventually figure it out, but when you take away his absolute number one target, he struggled mightily in finding another guy to be his go-to guy.
Yeah, I agree. Brandon Cooks is coming along a little bit, but I mean, I'm not at all proposing that Brandon Cooks and DeAndre Hopkins are on the same level. So, but yeah. So here we go. So 7-5 Colts going into a pivotal game in a game against the team I would wager is probably right in the fight for a wild card spot along with them at 7-5, which is going to Vegas to play the Raiders.
Yeah, and this one I've looked at it all season, especially being that late, and I'm like, oh god. It's like, I mean, it really could with the Titans, and depending on how much they fall off, if they fall off at all, I mean, it could be the game where it's like, all right, is this going to be a thing, or are we just going to be that last wild card spot because they added that extra? But I mean, I'll give them the win.
Okay. I think Colts fans might now be pacified on a 3-game win streak. Joel, where are you on Colts fans now?
No, Colts fans will still hate everybody.
85 Colts going to the desert and beating the Raiders, and Joel says doesn't matter. Okay, home against the Texans.
See, this one is difficult because I normally I like to do predictions every season, and I'll go through every single game, and normally I will split the Titans and the Texans almost every single season to where they go 4-2 in the division. But if they go 3-3, I'll give them a win. I think that late in the season, going into Christmas, they give the Colts fans what they want, and they sweep the Texans in 2020.
Joel, the Colts are 9-5 on Christmas. Are they happy yet?
No, they're still telling us that it's just all bad opponents.
Joel is the Grinch, as it turns out.
I'm not the Grinch.
Well, I know where Daniel's going on this one, because the Colts cannot win in Pittsburgh. So Colts
Yeah, they can't win in Pittsburgh, and even if Roethlisberger's not the starting quarterback, I don't know what it is about in Pittsburgh. They just can't do it. And with two games left, with that being their second to last game, I imagine they've already got the division in hand. But the Steelers might very well be competing for a bye in the first round of the playoffs. So yeah, I'll say Steelers beat the Colts.
We also learned in the very first game of the season that the Colts are absolutely susceptible to curses and cannot shake them.
Absolutely.
They cannot win an opener, and they cannot win in Jacksonville. So if they can't win in Pittsburgh, that's not changing.
Can I say something here? Because I think I know where you're going to go in the final week, but we'll get there in 1 second. Is that they're going to go, they're probably making the playoffs based on where you have them. But I don't think there's going to be a single believer in the Colts going into the playoffs, since you have them losing to almost every good team.
Yeah. And that's kind of where I'm at right now. Like, I'm not gonna lie. That's kind of where I'm at right now. Like, beating the Raiders, I think is a good win. But yeah, I mean, you beat the Texans twice. I don't think the Texans make the playoffs. And yeah, I mean, you lose to the Packers, you lose to the Ravens, you lose or you beat the Raiders, lose to the Steelers. Yeah, I'm not saying that they're gonna do much in the playoffs, but I still think they are good enough to make the playoffs.
That might have been one of my favorite moments of the season. Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
I'm not gonna dip my toe in it. I'm going full flat. Yeah, they go 10-6, and they still might. I mean, they might get a win in the playoffs, but I mean, I don't see them going very far. I mean, that's just the reality of it.
Yeah. So we'll close it out January 3rd against Jacksonville. They get that win.
Yeah. And it's the same reason, like, I do a little bit of sports betting, and I never do divisional games. Like, divisional games, they play different than everything else. That's why like I said, normally whenever – if I believe in a team, I still give them a 4-2 record in the division, because the division games are just different. You see them twice a year, every single year. That, I mean, they know everything about you. But, yeah, I think they make right what they did wrong in Jacksonville and beat the Jags at home.
I think you're right. Joel, I want to ask you, because I know you hate doing these, but was there any game in there that you adamantly disagreed with?
Not adamantly, no.
Which one did you minorly disagree with?
Unless...
We're here for friction, Joel. We need friction. Let's go.
Unless... So I don't know. I'm sort of eyeing the Ravens as maybe being like, If you've been reading Ravens writers, although they just traded for Yannick Ngakoue, if you've been reading Ravens writers, there's a lot of skepticism around that team. For whatever reason, I don't know if it's the offense or what, but they, like, every time I see, like, the Raiders, the Ravens will win a game. Like, they won a game by in blowout fashion against the Bengals, and people, and like all the Ravens writers were like, nah, they might be bad. So I'm just kind of wondering. I don't know if that game is maybe more gettable than we think. I mean, who knows? Maybe not. Their defense is really, really good. I just know that, like, sort of like the Bears, where, like, I felt like going into the Bears game, everyone was like, yeah, the Bears are 3-0, but I feel like there's a lot of, like, Ravens writers right now that just keep going, like, yeah, the Ravens seem to be really good, but we have questions. And all the questions are on offense, which, yeah. I don't know. So I still I'm not saying I predict that they'll win that game. I'm just saying, like, if you want some minor disagreement, I've just been sort of eyeing that one as like a are the Ravens really good? We don't really seem to know.
I thought you might pick one of those Titans games, honestly.
No, I mean, I'll give about the Ravens. Yeah, I could still see the Colts winning that, only mostly because the Ravens just barely beat the Eagles. They got to go play the Steelers this week. You know, they play host to the Steelers, but the Steelers, I think, could possibly get that win since they just barely beat the Eagles. And then, yeah, I could see them limping into Indy, and because it's in Lucas Oil and the Colts for some reason play better there, and they could potentially, with this defense and everything that's stifling the run, yeah, I could see them beating the Ravens.
There's just some weirdness with the Ravens where people aren't treating them like the juggernaut that I thought they were going to be, which is just making me wonder about them a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, I could see a scenario where they win that game. I could see a lot of scenarios where they win that game. But, yeah, I mean, it's just my gut says Ravens win that one.
I like where you came. I might be with you, your original, like, gut, which is I might have them split with the Titans, split with the Texans, and still finish 10-6. But that's I think if I were asked to pick the end of the year, I might be in the same boat. I think that's probably a good way to go, given where they are. So, Joel, that was a great choice. And we can talk about Daniel in front of him while he's listening. But nice, well done. that was great. That was awesome, Daniel. I really appreciate. We both really appreciate you coming on Cover 2. That was. Was it? Great your appearance on here. What did you think? Was it good, bad?
Oh, I mean, I enjoyed it. It's a little different than because I'm a part of another podcast. So, like, it's a little bit different because, like, what we'll do is it's just two of us. So, like, it's my thoughts and then his thoughts, and that's it. And we move on to the next thing. Where this one, at least, you had, like, the mediator, and then there's two. But even though me and Joel didn't really disagree on a whole lot of stuff. But, yeah, I mean, I had fun. I loved it.
Good.
Well, what's your bye week plans?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, God. Still working. I work on Sundays. So normally, because I work evenings for CBS4 and Fox 59. So I work every Sunday anyway, but, like, I'm still watching football. That's all I do.
That's what we're going to be doing. Joel and I, spoiler alert, are going to be watching football all day on Sunday. So
absolutely.
It's going to be a good one. So, yeah, Daniel, thank you so much. And thank you all for listening to the Colts Cover 2 podcast. We will be back. We probably won't have a Sunday podcast, Joel, so... we have nothing to break down. So,
wait, whoa, what do you mean probably? I thought that was like a hard, you know.
I mean, I might call you Sunday night and be like, listen, Titans, Steelers, we got to talk about it. So you're right. I can definitively say we will not have a podcast, which is why this one is extra long and extra good. So there you go. That should tide you over until next week. I think Joel and I will try to do I thought we could safely wait for trade deadline talk, but maybe not. Maybe we should have jumped on that a little sooner since teams seem to be pulling the trigger on stuff. But we'll get into that next week and about trade deadline stuff and who guys knew who the Colts maybe could be targeting, positions they should be trying to upgrade, things like that. So thank you again for joining us, and talk to you guys later.